Welcome to the weekly Dharma Talk podcast from the Columbus Karma Teksum Choling Buddhist Meditation Center. This week's Dharma Talk is entitled This Precious Life by Lama Kathy Wesley. When we face hard times, it's hard to remember what the Buddha taught about our lives, that no matter how difficult things are, we possess a unique gift, the power to change. This talk will cover this unique gift and how we can remember it when we need it most. If you like our Dharma Talk series, please consider donating to Columbus Karma Teksum Choling at columbusktc.org. Enjoy the podcast.
Well, good morning. It's wonderful to see everyone today. Thank you for coming today. My name is Kathy Wesley, and I'm the resident teacher here at Columbus KTC. And I'd like to say hello to all the folks who are joining us on YouTube and Facebook, as well as all of you who are here this morning. It's wonderful to be here. I wanted to give you a little bit of news at the beginning today, and that is that this week I heard from Lama Karma Drodol, who is the Tibetan teacher, who is going to be coming here next week to do his weekend program on the everyday wisdom of meditation. If you haven't checked it out online and signed up, you can do so through Eventbrite or by going to our website and clicking on Lama Karma's program information. He's going to be teaching meditation and how to use it in everyday life. And he's giving a refuge ceremony on Saturday for those who are interested in beginning their Buddhist path. So I'm pretty excited about him coming and being here with us. But when I spoke to him earlier this week, he wanted to talk about more than just the visit. He said, "Oh, I need to let you know that the craftsman in Nepal who is making our statues for our Buddhist altar, they're finished. The statues are finished." And that means that the three statues that were ordered for us by our founder, Kempo Kartha Rinpoche, the statues that were ordered by him before he passed away, they're finished now. And they will be ready to ship in a couple of weeks. And then it will take them a couple of weeks to get here. By boat. And so the boat bringing these will arrive 2 weeks after they are shipped, and then maybe a week or two after they arrive in the U.S., they'll be here. Our current thought is that the statuary will be kept in their shipping crates for now, because they are gold covered. And we don't want to scratch them until we have to move them. So if anybody's interested in being part of the moving crew with the dollies and trying to figure out how to get crates onto the elevator, you can let me know. It will probably happen at the last minute. We may know about it with a few hours to spare. So in any case, once the statues arrive here, they will wait, hopefully patiently, in one of the downstairs rooms until we can measure them and get them all set to be installed in the shrine. The shrine itself is only partially created here. We have the two banks of cabinetry on either side, which are the base cabinets, as my buddies in carpentry call them. The doors and drawers of the cabinetry are here, but we have to have fine wood craftsmen build the upper sections of the cabinetry The cabinets will fill the entire space behind me. And there will be an opening in the middle of them under these lights where a wooden throne, like you see in Buddha statues, a Buddha throne, will be built probably right about where I'm sitting. And it will be somewhere between 4 and 5 feet tall, and then a 6.5 foot tall Buddha statue will be put on top of it. So we're going to have two sets of cabinets on either side with beautiful statuary in them, and then the Buddha image in the middle. So it's pretty exciting. We've been waiting for this, you know, since we heard that they had been ordered. We're also getting a spire, a steeple. Yes, even Buddhist temples have steeples, and we're going to have the steeple ornament delivered also. It's about 5 feet tall, and it will sit on a base on top of our cupola here. So it's all pretty exciting, and I wanted to let all of you know about it. I have a picture of the beautiful face of the Buddha image on my laptop, and I'll hang back afterward if anybody would like to look at it. So thank you for being patient with the announcements. It's just, you know, when you hear about these things, you want to share because you see how beautiful this room is, how warm and lovely it is. And next week, a photographer in Woodstock, New York, is going to take photographs of all of the interior ornamentation that is displayed at the top of the wall of a Tibetan temple. And along the middle of the wall, we call it the chair rail in modern architecture. And there's going to be beautiful color, all five colors, beautiful colors, everywhere around the room. There'll be three color bands at the chair rail and two or three color bands at the top of the wall and even up into the ceiling. We've got a ceiling ornament for the very, very top. An eight-spoked Dharma wheel will be up there. It's all going to be done with wallpaper because to hire a team of temple painters is a little beyond our means right now, but we can hope for the future. So people who look at this particular room, they say, that's a lot of yellow. And I tell them, yeah, it really is a lot of yellow. But I think of it as a blank canvas for the beautiful, symbolic artwork that reminds us of the Buddhist idea of a pure realm. So that's what all of this is symbolizing. I think every cathedral or church that you've ever been in, no matter what denomination it is, it evokes heaven, what we think of as being heaven. And what's really interesting, of course, is in Buddhism, you see the circular designs that called mandalas that also have small squares in them. The small squares inside are the palaces of the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas, and that's what the four pillars and the eight beams are here, the Four Noble Truths, the Eightfold Noble Path that gives rise to an enlightened world. So I'm pretty excited about the whole thing, and right now it is a lot of yellow, but at some point it will start to look more like a traditional Tibetan temple on the inside. But that is not why you came today, to hear me talk about with excitement about statuary and artwork. Today's topic is this precious life. This precious life. And I don't know about you, but sometimes I feel a little unlucky. I feel a little unlucky in my life. Sometimes I feel lucky in my life, sometimes I feel unlucky. And I meet a lot of people who have a lot of hard times. And the people who have a lot of hard times in their life, sometimes they'll say that. They'll say, I just feel unlucky. Or some people will even go so far as to say, I feel like I'm under some kind of negative magic spell or something like that. And people who experience a lot of difficulty do have the tendency to fear that those hard times will last forever. And because they fear that the hard times will last forever, they start to worry, and then worry creates its own problems. You know, it's not bad enough that we're having hard times, then we have fear and worry about the future. And these are very difficult things. They can really give us a kind of a negative all over feeling about our life. But according to the teachings of the Buddha, all of this fear and worry and concern comes about because we don't clearly see the wealth that we already have. We don't see clearly our potential inside. We don't see our potential to change our interior circumstance, and we don't see the potential to change our external circumstance. Now, there are plenty of problems in this world that we have to address. We have to address poverty and inequality in every form it comes in. We've got a lot of problems, and we have to work on them as a society. Because this, as much as we'd like to think we've come a long way, we still have a long way to go. So I'm not talking necessarily about society and its problems right this minute. Right this minute, I'm talking about the laboratory of our own minds. You can call it a laboratory, you could call it a greenhouse. I mean, you could call it a garden, you could call it our own life's journey. I'm talking about our individual world that we're in right now. And according to the teachings of the Buddha, we need to take a little bit of time every day to develop a sense of gratitude for what we have. Now, I know that's going to sound real familiar because you see a lot of people on the internet and on television and other places talking about gratitude practice, where you try to think about the things that you feel grateful for as a way of increasing our internal appreciation for what we have. Because when we appreciate where we've been and what we've been through, then we can see the future, our own future, more clearly. And so there's a whole set of teachings in Tibetan Buddhism about this, about our current situation, and they call it the four thoughts that turn the mind towards spiritual life. The four thoughts that turn the mind towards spiritual life. And these four thoughts are ways that we can turn our mind away from our own fear, worry, and concern, ways to turn away from fear and worry and concern and toward our own interior light. And so that's how we have to start, because even though the Buddha also taught that we all have Buddha nature and we all have the potential to awaken, for most of us, that's just a abstract idea right now. It's just an abstract idea. Oh yeah, they tell me I have a mind that can become enlightened. Okay, hooray. Right, hooray, I can become a Buddha. Hooray, you know. But we don't know how. We don't know how to uncover our internal nature because we don't have the tools. I'll never forget when the founder of this center, my teacher, Kempo Kartha Rinpoche, when he said to us one time, he says, it's not like you're not intelligent. We're all intelligent people. It's not like we're not smart or that we don't have skills and we don't have things, you know, that we need. He says, it's just that we have not received the specific teachings yet that will help us uncover our internal nature. He said, in Tibet, we tell a story about a family that is disadvantaged and poor, and they are in a house with a dirt floor, and they don't realize that long ago previous occupants of the house had buried a treasure there, and so their their The solution to their poverty is right under their feet and they don't know it. So what they need is to have someone come along and say, hey, that family that used to live here, they buried a treasure there. Do you want to look? And then you get your shovels and start digging. So part of what motivates us to start digging are these four thoughts that turn the mind toward that process of awakening. In other words, it's the motivation and the fuel, if you will, to make that journey and to start that digging. And the first of these four is called this precious human life. And so I'm going to talk about that for maybe about 10 minutes here today, and then we'll maybe have a conversation with the question microphone afterward, where people can, if you have any questions about what I'm saying today, or if you have any general questions about Buddhism, you can start reflecting on things you might want to talk about during the discussion phase of our conversation. So the text says, there's a Buddhist prayer text that talks about the four thoughts that says, the first of the four thoughts is the precious human birth, which is free and well-favored. And so these two words, free and well-favored, have meaning. And so I'm going to tell you a little bit about what the texts say. The Buddhist texts say that freedom means that we're free from the kinds of problems that would prevent us from looking into and searching for our Buddha nature, such as the conditions of being without our resources. In other words, here, let me talk about it. People who are overcome with anger and can't get out of it, the people whose minds are clouded by hatred and anger, they can't start looking for their Buddha nature because they're overcome with hatred. And it's almost as though they're burning up. So sometimes they call this the experience of hell. Yes, there's a hell in Buddhist teachings as well. But the good news about the hell that is described in Buddhist teachings is that it's not forever. And no one sends you there, which is kind of nice. You know, we don't have to worry about that part. But we do have to look at our own anger and hatred, because it is the anger and hatred that we willfully grasp and use and work on that makes us feel like we are in hell. So let's say we're free from that kind of hatred. So that means we have the freedom of being free from that. Then there is the state of obsessive desire or compulsive desire, where we have to have more of everything. We never have enough. We're always hungry or thirsty for some experience, or hungry and thirsty for some possession. We're overcome by a greediness, and we don't want to share. It makes us always feel like we're deprived somehow. But then there are still other negative states we could be in. We could be in a negative state in which we feel as though everybody is against us, and we're always thinking that we're being persecuted. And we are always trying to figure out how to get the better of other people. So if we're free from that kind of thinking, then we're lucky. And there are some folks who just really can't get a hold on life. I remember meeting a woman once who had traumatic brain injuries when she was a child. And because of her traumatic brain injury, she went to school and couldn't learn. And other people harassed her. and said she was less than. And her response to that, she became very angry. But it all came from the fact that she couldn't process information. And it wasn't her fault. She was in accidents. But the fact of the matter is, nobody looked out for her. And nobody told her she was okay. And nobody took care of her when she was small. And so she became full of anger and unhappiness. And so this kind of negative life is a life that is sort of bound by instinct, almost like what you see in wild animals. And so if we're free from that kind of situation, that's another thing we're free from. And then, believe it or not, there's also the negative state of mind of pride. And if we're not free from the negative state of pride, we're always feeling like we're better than other people. And we're never satisfied then. We're always looking for other people to fulfill us or to give us what we think we deserve. It's not a good feel. And then if we're free from that, that's a good fortune on our part. And then there are those who, even though they know what the truth is, choose to be ignorant. We see this all the time. People who know what the truth is, but they choose to be ignorant of it. It's a horrible state to be in. It's a horrible state to be in. And then there are those who, just for some reason or another, they're just not put together right. They've got illnesses and they just are suffering intensely because of their illnesses and injuries and problems. So these are the kinds of things that we can say we are free of. And if we look at all of the negative states that we could have been in, the things we nearly escaped. I mean, we've all been through a lot of things in our life, right? And some of us are lucky to have survived this long. I know a lot of people of the older generation, they talk about those times. They say, if you can remember the 1960s and the 1970s, if you can still remember them, you're lucky. Because many people don't remember them at all because they went through them in, shall we say, an altered state. You know, if you can remember the 60s and 70s, you weren't really there. That's the joke. But the even younger people can relate to periods in their life when things were not going well for them. And so what I tell people is, the classic Buddhist teachings about the six lower states of existence, it all comes down to being ruled by negative thought patterns, hatred, pride, jealousy, attachment, and so on. If we are ruled by these negative emotions, then there's no way we're going to look for our Buddha nature, because we're so busy trying to get revenge on our enemies, take care of our friends, line up the people who are going to be our helpers in any kind of situation, and so on. We're just going to be really busy, and we will not have time to sit and meditate and find our Buddha nature. We just won't have any time. And so if we have these freedoms, that's a good thing to think about. And the resources are that we have a mind that can think. You know, the well-favored part of it. The freedom is the freedom from a negative state of mind. And the well-favored part is that we are very fortunate to have gotten this far in our life. No matter what we have been through, here we are. We're very fortunate to have lived this long. We're very fortunate to have gotten through our childhood and young adulthood and our middle adulthood and everything in between. We've managed to survive. Some of us have survived many things and recovered from many things and escaped many negative fates. And it's not just, you know, it's not just a missing that car accident you could have been in. There's a lot of other things that we bypassed, and we were very fortunate to have done so. So the practice of this first of the four thoughts is to reflect on how fortunate we have been to have lived this long, gone through this much, and learned this much. And to just sit back for a moment and think, wow, after everything I've been through, here I am, and I can still think for myself. I can still look after myself, take care of myself, take care of my family, do the things I need to do to keep my body and soul together. I can do all of these basic things. And I have a few minutes every day when I can meditate and I can reflect on positive things. So this is the purpose of what is called contemplation as opposed to meditation. Meditation is letting go of thoughts. We've already learned that technique, right? Where we sit and we we pay attention to the breath as it comes in and goes out, or use a mantra or some other object of attention. And then when our attention wanders from it, we bring it back. And when our attention wanders, we bring it back over and over again. We just keep bringing it back. And in this way, we build our internal strength to let go of things. The practice of shamatha gives us the strength and the power inside ourselves to make decisions about what we think about. That's why we have to take time at first and have a dedicated time to contemplate these four thoughts. We have to actually take time in our day and reflect and think about the four thoughts. We have to remember them and think about them. At first, we have to do it consciously because it's not going to come to us without that. But once we practice this over and over again, we'll actually begin to think about it in the day. We'll see something that reminds us, I'm very fortunate to be alive. I'm very fortunate to have what I have. And I make the aspiration, may all beings have what I have. Because that's really what you do with the precious human life. You make use of it. You make the most of it. First inside yourself, building the intention to benefit and serve others. Working on the intention to benefit others, to serve others, to help others. Because that's what we do with our gratitude. We use the gratitude as a way to propel us into doing things that will help and reach out to other people who aren't as fortunate, who don't have what we have. Even if all you do is when you come into a warm room in the winter, and think, oh man, I'm so fortunate to live in a place where I can have heat in the winter and coolness in the summer. May everyone in the world have comfort and goodness in their life. These kinds of intentions that we can create in our mind actually create a momentum of goodness in our mind. And that momentum of goodness starts to become second nature to us. And we begin to change our mind and change our thoughts and so on. So the whole function of reflecting on the four thoughts, and especially this first one, this precious human life, is just to see that we're very fortunate to be here right now and to have what we have and to feel grateful for what we have and then to make use of it so that others can have also. I think I'll stop there for the moment and apologize because I totally forgot to say the prayer at the beginning. I was so excited about the news I wanted to share with you, I forgot to do the prayer at the beginning. So let's all just think that we've said it. I take refuge, and I mean, right? It's a little too late, but it's never too late to do something virtuous. The refuge prayer. This is so funny. Everything's out of order today. It is not backwards day. It just came out that way. What, you know? Why not? It's never too late to do something good. So I'm going to read this in English, and if you feel motivated, you can read it in English with me two times, and then I'll chant it in Tibetan the last time. In the Buddha, the Dharma, and the assembly, most excellent, I take refuge until I reach enlightenment. By the merit of generosity and other good deeds, may I achieve enlightenment for the sake of all beings. In the Buddha, the Dharma, and the assembly, most excellent, I take refuge until I reach enlightenment. By the merit of generosity and other good deeds, may I achieve enlightenment for the sake of all beings. Okay, so now I get to do the little recitation in Tibetan. If you know it, you can join in, and if not, you can join in your heart and in your mind, thinking you dedicate the next half of our session to all sentient beings. Oh, Sanje Chudan Soji Chonahamla Jang Chu Pardu Dani Kyab Suchi Daji Jin Soji Bei Sunaham Ki Drola Tenshir Sanje It's slowly we will learn a few words here and there in Tibetan. The first word in Tibetan in the prayer is Sanjay. It means Buddha. Sang means completely purified of all those negative states. Remember the negative states we found that we were free from, right? It's the complete purification of all negative states. Jay means ripened, like a fruit is ripened. So not only have we subdued our mental afflictions, we've also begun to ripen our qualities of love, compassion, and wisdom. The Buddha has completely ripened them, and that's why Sangye is Buddha. Chu in this place is, in this context, means Dharma, the teaching of the Buddha, the truth. The word dong is actually, some people pronounce it dang. No, it's not dang. It's always the A in father in Tibetan transliteration. Dong means and. Sok means etc. Ki chognam la, all of you, the assembly, and so on. Jang Chup is the next line. Jang means the same thing as Sang, which means purified. Chup means as another word for ripened and so forth. Bardu, Dagni Chapsuchi. So it means, Bardu means until and so on. And so this prayer is a way of calling on our Buddha nature in the form of the external Buddha, the external Dharma and the external Sangha, and making the aspiration that we become like the enlightened ones. So thanks for praying with me, even if it was a little bit late. You know, my heart was in the right place. Just got a little excited. So to summarize the topic today of the precious human life, is that sometimes when we feel unlucky, it's because we aren't seeing clearly what we have. And if we remind ourselves of what we actually have and feel gratitude for what we have, then we'll be able to make the aspiration that we can share what we have with others, and that we can make use of this precious opportunity by becoming a Buddha in this lifetime, if we can. And if even if we can't, by exemplifying the qualities of the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas, which are generosity, a generosity of spirit and a goodness of spirit. Ethics, which is the stable ethical behavior of not harming others. Patience, which we all need. Diligence in our practice. Meditation and wisdom. And by doing these six virtuous things, may we become awakened Buddhas for the next generation and be of help to them. So I think I'll stop talking, because I think that's probably more than enough information for one talk, right? For one day. But maybe we can have a conversation for the next 5 or 10 minutes about any questions you might have about the Buddhist teaching, or whether it's about this teaching or something you've read about Buddhism that maybe you don't understand and that you'd like to have explained to you. There's a microphone here, and what you can do is you can come around the back of the room and hang out in the front row and ask your question when it's your turn. Anybody would like to do that? Yeah. And somebody can sit in the on-deck circle there in the front row.
When you talked about getting things out of order, it reminded me of a verse from a song I came across the other day. It's, there's no wrong way to do right, and no right way to do wrong.
Oh, I like that. I like that. Thank you for that. It's good to share. Hi, good morning.
Good morning. I have a sort of very nuts and bolts practical question.
Sure.
If I have a daily 15 or 20 minute shamatha practice, can you give some very, just some suggestions of how to start working with the four thoughts? And do I do shamatha for 5 minutes and then do the contemplation? Or what would you suggest is a good sort of method?
I really appreciate this. I'm going to see if we can't make this format. There's something that our wonderful senior meditation instructor, emeritus, Daryl Peters, developed that was called a short format for daily Buddhist practice. And how he structured it, I think, was the way I learned it from my teacher. So I'm happy to share that. What's in that format is that a person would begin with, it doesn't have to be Tibetan, an English recitation of the prayer of taking refuge, to kind of lay the foundation and kind of state our direction. You know, that's what really, it says, may I become like you, essentially, or may I practice in such a way. And so that's the foundation. Then the second thing one could do, I think it would depend on the individual. For some individuals, reflecting on the four thoughts first might be useful. It might help you stay on the cushion or the chair when you're doing your meditation. But for other people, they need to calm their mind first. So I think it doesn't matter which order these come in, but let's say that you're doing the shamatha meditation or the quiet sitting meditation first. Then you would sit and follow the breath for a little while, either using a timer or if you have a set of beads. Some people use their beads as a timer. They count off maybe a quarter or a half of a set of beads, and in-breath and out-breath, and they move a bead, and in-breath, out-breath, move a bead, in-breath, out-breath, and that's their timer. They don't have to set an electronic timer. And that you would sit for a short time, and then you would begin the reflection on the four thoughts. And one of my teachers, his name is Sittu Rinpoche. I attended one of his courses in India. He said that if you just think about the four thoughts, that's not entirely a contemplation. So he created a three-part method for contemplating the four thoughts. He said you start with each one of these steps uses the letter R in English. So the first one is review. Review. You review sort of the teachings in your mind. You can either read them in a book, like the Torch of Certainty or the Torch of True Meaning, or the other book I brought with me today. This one is not quite the phone book, but it's kind of big. There's one on the precious human life in the Jewel Ornament of Liberation. So you could read a description of the one that you're contemplating. Just read a little bit. You don't have to read the whole chapter. Just read a few sentences. And then that's the first one, is review and reflect, you know. And after you've reviewed and reflected for a while, you might form a feeling inside yourself. It's like a shift. You'll feel it as like a shift inside your being where you think, you know, that's really true for me. It's really true for me. I do have a precious human birth. That is the second step, which is recognition. There's review, and then the second step is recognition. And when you've arrived at this recognition, the third step, you go into the third step immediately, which is resolution. You make a resolution inside yourself. You say, because I have a precious human life, I will practice the Dharma. I will use my precious human life to practice the Dharma. And that is the entirety of a Buddhist contemplation. Review the situation, the facts, recognize their truth, and then resolve to do something about it by practicing the Dharma. And the resolution is always the same. I really need to practice. Okay, and so then after that, you could then do your shamatha practice or do some more shamatha practice. And then at the conclusion of your practice session, whatever is in it, then you would dedicate the merit, which is the traditional way that a Buddhist practice is ended, by dedicating the goodness to everyone. And some people say, well, like, how long do I have to spend contemplating the four thoughts? And it doesn't matter, as long as you have that moment of being moved in your being by it. And a friend of mine said that he had an especial problem working on the second of the four thoughts, which will be the, this is going to be a four-part series on the four thoughts. And the next one is impermanence. And he said, you know, he said, I had a hard time at first thinking about impermanence until I realized that I personally could die at any moment. He said, and that really moved me. You know, he said, when I thought about impermanence, oh, the seasons are passing, blah, blah, blah. But then I thought, oh my gosh, I'm going to die someday. He said, then I really got it. So, but did that fill what you were looking for?
Yes, thank you.
All right, hey, thanks for asking about that. And I will make sure that short format for Buddhist practice gets up online someplace where folks can download it. It's on lamakathy.net, lamakathy.net. It's one of the first things in the teachings page. Thank you.
Hi.
Hi.
So when you were talking about anger and hatred and them being a barrier to gratitude, I was actually remembering a time in my life where I was receiving a lot of messages of, you know, practicing gratitude, and I was so mad. I could not access it, but I really wanted to.
I get it.
So in those moments of just, you know, ranting and railing against the universe for whatever, what do you recommend to maybe break that cycle so that we can get to a place where we can practice gratitude?
I hear what you're saying. You know, I have to say that one of the things my teacher told me was, he said, sometimes when emotions and emotional states hit us, he says it's like being knocked over by an ocean wave, and there's nothing you can do but keep your head above water. And it won't be until later that, as you reflect back on it, that you're going to be able to get hold of it and work with it. He said, sometimes you just get carried away. So the advice I'm going to give is, I'm going to say your mileage may vary, because of what he said. He said, some of our emotional states have so much history and habit energy behind it, either because of the way we were raised or just maybe our own internal temperament, which I know so many people who fight their temperament because they're just naturally impatient, or they're naturally sad, or they're naturally afraid. You know, there are certain things that our habits are just really deeply behind. And what my teacher said is that we may not be able to totally change our temperament, but what we will get slowly better at is noticing when we're in a spin and being able to get out from under the spin. He didn't use the word spin, but the idea is that when you get into a spiraling situation because the habit energy has taken you down the drain with your mental affliction, it's really hard. It is like whether you use the analogy of going down the drain or getting hit by a wave, it's more than you can do. And so that's the first thing, is to set our expectations properly. We're not gonna be able to get on top of a really strong emotion when it's happening. However, when it's over, we can reflect on it. And we can say, you know, I see where I went wrong there. And you know, I'm gonna try my best to not let it get me like that. Kempo Karthar Rinpoche said, Buddhism is a peaceful religion. He said, but you know, every country has an army and they all have to prepare for war. And he said, so our country was no different. We had soldiers too. And he said, they had to train themselves so that when danger came, they knew exactly what to do and they didn't have to think long about it. And he said, you know, we need to get that way with our mental afflictions. We need to train with our mental afflictions the same way that soldiers train to go into battle. We have to have it be second nature to watch for them and to do our best to not let them rule us. And so what I tell people is, look for the physical characteristics of the spin going down that drain, because you can tell. Because for example, when you're angry, sometimes your chest will even get hot, right? Or your face will get really hot. And sometimes if you're scared, your body will get really cold. And when you're tensed, your body will shake. And so it's being able to notice those physical cues that you're starting to get, it's starting to go out of control. And he said, then if you can, he said, start by just hooking onto your breath. Just being with your breath for a moment. It's like you're unplugging your laser focus on the negative feeling or the negative person or whatever. You know, it's like, I mean, you can't do this when you're running from a tiger. I understand that. This is something you can do later. But the idea is that you recognize the feeling and say, wait a minute, I've got to pay attention. I have to stop. My friends in the 12-step tradition, they have a word, halt, H-A-L-T, and it means hungry, angry, lonely, tired. So it's like, again, to notice your physical characteristics, like when these things are happening, that means you've got to take a step back. And so it's like, step away from that moment of anger, step away, you know. So then you just tell yourself, you know, if I run down the drain with this, it's going to hurt me. So I'm going to take a moment and not do that. And if I have to turn away and walk away, that's what I'm going to do. But you see, we have to recognize that some of these feelings are just going to throw us over. And it won't be until my friends in 12-step have another saying, when we are sick and tired of being sick and tired, then we're going to decide to make a shift in how we address these things. So that's kind of how we get these physical things, and that like wakes us up to say, ooh, you better notice this. And the way we get hold of it is by taking a step back, looking at it as though from the outside, and then if we have to turn away, turn away. But there's an additional technique where we can say, this anger has never been my friend. This anger, you know, feeding this anger, it's never helped me. So right now, I make the inner aspiration that I and all beings are free from this. May we be free from this. And may we become Buddhas in the future. And then you turn around. It's not just turning around. It's turning around with this wish that someday may I be able to cope in a way that I can't cope now. And so we use the turning away when we can't think. And when we can think, you see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
When we can think, we think, may I and everybody who is feeling angry right now, may we be able to walk back from this. And then there's still even more, that, more variations on that that you can do down the line, where you can evoke compassion for yourself in the moment and compassion for others. But that's a, you know, it takes a little time. So I hope that helps. Yeah?
Yeah, thank you very much.
Okay, no, thanks for asking. We have time for, let's see, we got time. We've got time for one or two more. Hi.
Hi. I guess I'm more of a comment than a question, but...
Okay, you might need to get a little closer to the mic or, yeah, angle it up to you. There you go.
It's a bit more of a comment, I guess, than a question. Maybe there will be a question at the end with direction, but the... So I have background, a little background. I have a stomach illness that tries to kill me semi-regularly, so being close to death has been pretty... pretty frequent for me. I'm also a boxer, so I chose a sport where it can happen as well. But you were talking about grace in the moment, and I was remembering something I figured out a few years ago. And it was when I was in an intense negative emotion, and I used the intensity of the negative emotion to find grace. And actually what I found it in was, it was a breakup, and I was just really run down about it, and there was a moment where I didn't feel like being run down anymore. It might have even been before that. Just at some point, my brain started thinking, if I am this hurt, therefore I still have this much ability, this much intensity to love somebody later. Mm-hmm. So all of my intensity negative is also, by the same token, can be intensity the other side. And that has helped me a ton, a lot. But you could use it, like, for example, you're running from a tiger. I'd probably be maybe a little stupid and thinking like, oh, I'm fast, boy, or something, like just running. And then just being happy that I can get away from the tiger. Like,
right.
That's a skill to be grateful for. And I don't know, I guess I'm not completely free of fear. I mean, still got to go into the boxing ring pretty regularly, but... if that helps anybody else, it definitely helped me a lot.
I really appreciate you sharing this, because I think that when we share our stories and we share our journey, we learn from each other that way, right? In ways that we wouldn't otherwise have learned. And you said a couple of things that really resonated for me. And one of them was, I felt the determination that you had in your mind because you've had to survive so much. Right? So you know that there's something on the other side of all that intensity, and that the other side of that intensity is grace. I totally understand what you're saying. And we have to, that's why I'm saying that if we can take that one step back, and that's a really powerful thing, just taking that one step back and seeing ourselves as though from the outside saying, has this served me? Has this helped me? And if the answer is no, then you've got a couple of things, of options, right? And I really appreciated what you said about looking into the intensity of it. Because on the other side of that intensity, when we don't cling, when we don't cling to our story about what is happening, we step back from that story, that's where the grace happens. Because when we're locked into our story about this being awful, right? We're locked into the story about this being awful, then we have no choice but to go down the drain with whatever we're thinking and feeling. But when we realize we have a choice and we can step back, that's where grace happens, because we're opening a space for something good to come from where we are. And then what kicks in after that will be whatever we have trained to do. And it sounds to me like your training is taking you in the direction of gratitude and in the direction of there is, in the direction, if I may say, that all things are impermanent. That's not what you said, but the idea is that all things, even suffering, is impermanent. And everything is changing all the time. And so I really appreciate you sharing that, because the determination is what the part, that's impressive, because we, again, when you're sick and tired of being sick and tired, you look for another way, right? And so you look for another way and you found that other way. And I'd say meditation is a helpful tool in being able to make those choices and decisions. Because until we can slow down the processes of thought through meditation, we are still being pushed by all that habit energy. All that habit energy, you know, I've always reacted this way, or I've always done it this way, and this, you know. And so making a different choice is a little scary sometimes, but there you go. Now, the last thing you said that that really was interesting to me is about fear. My teacher, Kenpo Kartha Rinpoche, gave a number of teachings about the various mental afflictions that human beings come up against. And he said that fear and, I've forgotten the other one, whether it was anger, I think it's fear and anger, he said, are the most intractable, the most difficult to resolve. Because he said, these are the closest to our sense of self, which itself is manufactured. This was the teaching of the Buddha, that we don't see. The Buddha didn't teach a soul. He didn't teach that there was an entity or a soul in a person. He actually used the word stream of being, so that we're sort of dynamically coming together and falling apart every minute. And that's what allows us to change, the fact that we are not a solid entity, but that we're always moving and changing with what we think. And so that allows for infinite amount of change, because everything is always changing every moment, every moment, every moment. And so the fear that you feel today, you may not be able to get over, okay, but because we are changing continuously, you're going to learn better and better and better ways of coping with that fear, so that it's going to start with, there's the ignition of this self-clinging, like, oh, I'm afraid, you know, it's all, because self-clinging is the basic emotion, like, I exist, that's the basic emotion. And because I exist, I have enemies. Because I exist, I have friends. Because. I like pleasure, I don't like pain. You know, it's like I. It's all behind everything. And that doesn't come, we don't lose that one until Buddhahood. You know, but we can make some progress on it every day. And he said, fear and anger are the two hardest ones to do. So he said, don't be mad at yourself if you can't do them. He said, but what you'll get is you'll get closer and closer and closer and closer, closer to the moment of the ignition of the anger or the ignition of the fear. You know, you'll get closer and closer and closer. You'll start being able to cope sooner and sooner and sooner and sooner until it's like almost automatic. He says it'll happen. He says right now it's a 2 or 3 step process. He said, but it's going to get better, because if the more you practice it, the better it gets. So I'm taking his word for it. Partly, because I felt like he was an enlightened being, you know? But the other part is that I've seen change in me too. I've seen some little changes in myself. And, you know, I'm still angry, I'm still fearful. I'm like everybody else. But Rinpoche asked me to start talking about this stuff, so I talk about this stuff. But I appreciate you saying that. There's time for one more, if there's one more. Oh, did you have? Okay, yeah, and this will be the last comment.
Sure. I was just gonna say really quick, I appreciate you were saying detach from your version of the story. I really appreciate that part because I'm constantly reminding myself that I only have one side of every story.
Oh yeah.
Good or bad mood.
Yeah.
Most of the time though, it leads me to, I guess, a better mood because that means I have so much more to learn. I'll never be able to finish learning, which is
right.
Awesome. I love that.
Yeah. Thank you for sharing that. Yeah, we all have our stories that we tell ourselves, and meditation starts to show us that the story can change. And when you cut that one thought in meditation and let go of that thought, it actually disappears. That one thought that you let go of in meditation, it actually disappears. And when it disappears, there's just calm and openness and awareness left. And that's called basic or ordinary mind. And we can talk about that later on, but it's a clue about what's possible in the future. So thanks for that. Well, we'll have to stop here for today, but this has been a really good discussion. Thank you all for participating and being here for it. There's a dedication of merit here, and we'll think that we put together all of the goodness that we've accomplished here together today, and we'll dedicate all of it to all beings who could not be here today, and that we dedicate it that they too may find the best path for themselves. We'll recite this just once in English. By this merit, may all attain omniscience. May it defeat the enemy wrongdoing. From the stormy waves of birth, old age, sickness, and death, from the ocean of samsara, may we free all beings. The courageous Manjushri, who knows everything as it is, Samantabhadra, who also knows in the same way, and all the bodhisattvas that I may follow in their path, I completely dedicate all this virtue. Thanks, everyone. Thank you for being here, and we'll see you next time.
Thank you for joining us for this week's Dharma Talk. We hope you enjoyed the podcast. If you did, please subscribe, rate, and review it on iTunes. To learn more about the Columbus Karma Teksum Choling or to donate to support our Dharma Talk series, please visit our website at columbusktc.org. The opening and closing music for the podcast is Tibetan Flute Song by Tamding Arts at tamdingarts.com. Please join us again next week for another Dharma Talk.